This is, as Ed has just said, how to get players immersed and engaged in the war game. Why is that important? And I'll explain the references in a couple of slides' time. Altering the world. Yeah, that's a really important quote, and I have no idea where I found it. One of you guys probably wrote it. If someone can tell me where I got that from, please come and see me afterwards. But the point is, that is what we're talking about. And this is a quote from our chair, Ed McGrady. It is massively important that players are engaged. Just to be clear what I'm talking about in terms of wargaming, and those of you who were here yesterday did exactly this. It is people, the decisions they make, and the resulting story living experience. That is the essence of wargaming. It's not tools, technology, it is people and their decisions. That is what I'm going to concentrate on. Anyone who thinks different, that's fine, come chat afterwards. I don't want to talk about definitions. It is people making decisions and living a story, exactly what you did yesterday. That's what I'm talking about. A few assumptions. Each of these needs a presentation in its own right, but I'll just point out, when I talk wargaming, people, decisions, story living, it is not synonymous with simulation. Simulation manual, computer, supports the wargame, which supports training or analysis. I'm assuming that the processes that bring all of everything together are sound, so I'm not going to talk about the processes of wargaming. And while it is primarily applicable to training education, getting everyone immersed in the flow is just as important for analytical purposes as well, and with the hobby side also. So those are my assumptions. Right, the references. Very little of what I'm going to say now is new. It is all in these wonderful books, and I put these up because these are the books I refer back to most often, plus, and this isn't just because Ed is the chair, the various articles that he has produced with Peter Perler about narrative, story living, so on and so forth. So you can get those afterwards, as I said, but these are wonderful books. And as Eric Jacopan pointed out last year, they are all about, those four, computer games or video games, but they absolutely apply to manual simulations as well. Thank you, Eric, which I will point out. And just to reinforce, Jane McGonigal on one of the intro slides I showed earlier. Absolutely fabulous stuff. Right then, three quotes for free. I'll let you read those. This one is really important. As everyone who's designed a game knows, it takes an immense amount of effort to make something look simple. And then those people watching it think, well, that's easy, I could do that. Wrong answer. It takes a lot of effort to do that. But the one I want to concentrate on is that misquote of Klaus Fitz. So everything I'm just about to tell you is really simple and straightforward, and you will just sit there and nodding, hopefully in understanding rather than sleep. But putting it into practice is massively difficult, and it always baffles me as to why. So please keep that one in mind. Right, on with the show. Those are the areas I'm going to talk about, all to do with how to get players to engage with the war game. This is fast and furious. Firstly, games, war games. These are some of the traits, if you like. I'll show you the traits and emotions in a second. We want to release positive emotions. I'm going to come back to that time and time again. And that's the one I want you to take away. Organising people around a voluntary obstacle. People come to board games, to after-dinner games, because they want to. Most of the people who turn up to our war games are there because someone has told them to be there, so they report for duty. Our job as wargame designers is from that point to make sure they want to engage. So, the game traits you can see there. This is general games, board games, tennis, whatever it may be. You will see that you could relate those directly to war games. Of course you can. A game, a war game, same thing. So those are the traits, but it's that one that I want to concentrate on. Jane McGonigal, again, and I hope you can see that at the back, organising people around a voluntary obstacle, so getting people to voluntarily engage. That's enough about games. Work, lots of different types of work. I'm not going to explain each of those to you, they're pretty self-explanatory, but the point is, people do not mind working. Work is fine, you can get people working and they do not mind. I'm just going to point out that word epic, which I've added on to those, which I'll come back to time and time again. But work is not a problem. More important, The opposite of play isn't work, it's depression. Okay, that is a really important concept. And for us, that bottom bit, optimistic sense of our own capabilities, that is gameplay. And anyone who didn't get that yesterday, I feel sorry for, because I thought it was just wonderful, hand of respect. So that is a really important concept. It starts addressing the psychology of why these things are so important. Enough about work. Oh yeah, sorry, high stakes, as I mentioned, I'm going to come back to that time and time again. Save the world, literally. Right then, key concepts. This is fun. I'm going to work around that direction. Eustress, that is stress that you develop yourself, from inside yourself. That is a good thing. That is what we want people to generate and self-generate during a war game. It needs to be self-generated. Optimistic, you'll remember I've already said, an optimistic engagement with the world. Confident that people are going to do well. And that top bit, no fear. So many war games are a career-breaking moment, and that will naturally inhibit what is happening in terms of the war game. So our players should be self-generating stress, but be happy to do that without any fear of failure. More of that later on. Next one, naches, a Spanish word, vicarious pride, pride through someone else. How does that work? So many staff college exercises last, let's say, 2 weeks, and in the middle there is always an appointment change. So you get your really good student to be chief of staff commander. Halfway through, that person gets an appointment change and does some bucksy appointment, normally to do with logistics, and switches off. And a less able student is stepped up to commander or chief of staff. Why not take the guy who's just done it for a week and make him the mentor of the less able student who's now stepping up? That keeps both of them engaged. There's a symbiotic relationship. They both benefit. Simple. Have I ever seen that happen? No. Next one. Fiero. Fiero is fundamental. This is an Italian word, and it is broadly translated as pride, or pride through succeeding. And it does all those things. I'll come back to those in a second. About 3-4 weeks ago, we were yet again running the Falklands, RCAP Falklands, with the Royal Marine Advanced Amphibious Warfare Course. Two of these warfighting Marines were the enemy. They were the Argentinians, and they were attacking the task group in San Carlos, normal stuff, and they were targeting the amphibious shipping for a change. And through a series of dice rolls, they sunk one of the landing ship logistics, and then they sunk Fearless, HMS Fearless, the command vessel and the key to the logistics. And these two warfighting Marines rolled the dice across the table, happy with that. They sunk the Fearless, and they rocked back in their chairs. They went, yes! Stone Age man, when he killed a mammoth, would have gone, in whatever guttural language he was saying, yes! It's exactly the same emotion. It is, survival, it should be fun, it releases endorphins, your wargamers should be on drugs throughout, and they are endorphins, because this is stuff about survival. So, Fiero moments, really, really important. They do not come at the end of the after action review, they happen every day as often as you can make them happen. And they can just be a pat on the back. It can just be a roll of a dice. It could be anything. Fiero is a really, really powerful concept. Ed's just referred to the flow. Don't worry about this. You can have a look at it afterwards. We're coming back to that time and time again. People being in the flow, which, you know, I hope most of you have got. Guy with an apparently unpronounceable name is just cheek sent behind, very, very easy. Being in the zone. We've all done it, where you're doing something and time just seems to warp. And 4 hours later you think, good Lord, where did that time go? That is being in the flow. That is where our players should be throughout the wargaming experience. It is all about matching challenge to capabilities. Stretching people and keeping them engaged. And if it's too difficult, they become frustrated and they disengage. If it's too easy, they just disengage. So it is all about the challenge matching the capabilities. Every single exercise control meeting I have ever run starts with the first agenda item, what is the level of pressure on the players? And then you turn to the directing staff and they tell you, so that you can balance those things and keep people in the flow. Those are the conditions. Just let me scan those. And these will reiterate as I continue to go through the presentation. But being in the flow is massively important, and it all comes down to that. So we must always be cognizant of the level of pressure on the players. Sounds simple, it's common sense, does it happen? Not enough. Okay, happiness. This is derived from those books I showed you, but this could be a talk on lifestyle now. Forget wargaming for a second, this is just general happiness. Jane McGonigal again, she's absolutely fabulous, so go and have a look at her book. Right, Ed's already used these phrases, extrinsic and intrinsic. Goals need to come from within you. It is autotelic, self-generated goals. Extrinsic rewards, think the American dream, cars, money, women or boys, whatever you want, do not lead to happiness. End of. Intrinsic goals, goals that come from within you, do, and they lead to durable happiness. Think back to Matt Caffrey, setting up Connections in 1993, and where he's got to now. That is entirely an internal goal, I suspect, unless it's led to women and cars, which I somehow doubt. So that is an internal goal, and that is where you get happiness. Right, there are four secrets to happiness. This is life stuff now, but it applies to gaming and wargaming. Satisfying work, I've already mentioned it. Clear goals, actionable next steps, you've seen in some of the other slides. A degree of agency, work, is a good thing. People do not mind working. It has to be satisfying. The experience of being hopeful. I'm now starting to repeat myself deliberately. Fun failure. Failure is fine. That's great. No fear. Do you remember the box that appeared up there? No fear. As long as people understand why they have failed and can see themselves getting better, that's fine. Anyone who's played the board game Pandemic, global viruses, you lose, you lose, you lose, you lose, but you want to keep playing because you know you can do it better next time. So it's okay to fail. As Phil said a couple of conferences ago, you win or you learn. Really, really important. And the prospect of getting better. Nothing to be said about this. That's what yesterday was all about. That is self-evident when you come down to any sort of war game. It is really, really powerful. And meaning is that word epic again, service beyond yourselves. So again, I hope yesterday you were kind of getting that, but players in a war game need to be giving service to the group, to the mission, whatever it may be. So those four things, the secret to happiness, that's just in life, but they apply to games. Okay, the context and story. Epic, yet again, if the context of the game is epic, if you are saving the world, it helps people engage. Or the biggest positive emotion. That's not my words. I can't prove that, but I believe it. So something which is awesome. Again, think yesterday. It's a whole room filled with really good components, a whole building filled with really good components. I thought that was quite awesome. So the games need to look good, the context needs to be good, but also the components need to look good. And this epic, again, it comes through. This is probably a little bit too much computer gaming, to be honest, in terms of first-person shooters. With our war games, we need to move that way, but clearly it's got to be credible. But even so, working towards epic is a good thing. Okay, players work in a possibility space. That's a little bit of a technical term, but it's where the players engage. Just have a quick look at that. The bit I want you to take away, players author their own experience. People, decisions, story living. So those are all important, but that's the one I want to take forward. Personal view now, fictionalized versus fictional versus real world. It's very difficult to wargame in the real world these days because of security classifications, etc., etc. Fictionalization is fine. The closer to reality, I find the better in terms of players engaging. Personal view. And that is, again, another massive benefit. Players can do anything, no fear, no fear of failure. So you can do whatever you like. And people were doing that yesterday in terms of negotiation, someone working for the CIA. Okay, this all happens within the magic circle, or colloquially, the bubble. You get players into the bubble, training or analytical. And this is absolutely critical. All of this is absolutely critical. That's what the bubble is. It is our job as the designers and the people who run exercise control to protect that space and to keep players in the bubble. Sounds obvious, it's very, very difficult. Staff college exercises do my head in, because you've got the players in the flow, they're all going along nicely, and then suddenly they're marched next door to have a briefing on the battlefield tour that's happening in a month's time, and the bubble is popped. It is really important to keep them engaged inside the possibility space, inside the magic circle. To get them into the magic circle, there is a key moment, the invitation to play. Think of the theatre and the lights going down and the curtains going back and you're in the play. That is the case with a war game. So you get all the administration bollocks out the way, you do all that, all the meets and greets, and you then, literally lights go down, put something visceral and compelling, the story, using media or whatever you want to do, to make sure that people understand that the war or whatever it is doesn't have to be conflict, the situation has started. They step into the bubble, into the magic circle, and you then get them to stay there. So the invitation to play is a key moment beyond which belief is suspended. Okay, and this is Ed's article writ large. Players need to construct their narrative. It is not a presented narrative. Personally, I hate inject-led exercises which are predetermined in terms of the inject, because you're just dragging people through the nose, through your story. The players, as Jim explained yesterday, need to create the narrative, because then they will do that massively important concept, and they will do and they will understand, but they have to create the decisions. Steered towards objectives, always, but that is so important, and Peter and Ed's article sum that up. Classic dramatic art speaks for itself, you need to have a climax. Okay, finally, 1.5 minutes to go. Feedback, really, really important. Think about computer games, first-person shooters. You get feedback every single second. Every second you are seeing something, you're being shot at, you're shooting, whatever. That is difficult to replicate in a manual simulation or a war game, but we need to strive to do it. So feedback needs to be multi-sensory, and it is much more than just the after-action review at the end of the 2-3 weeks, whatever it may be. It needs to be all the time, and it can, again, just be a pass on the back. That's feedback, that's great. It can be, sorry, I'll come back to that. Just look at those examples. Lots and lots of different things you can do. A dice roll, a role play, all of these are feedback. We need to have more and more of them. And that quote at the bottom there needs to happen during the war game, not just at the end, where players can react to it. So feedback, massively important. I am there. In summary, it's really, really simple. All you've got to do is that. But it is very difficult to put into practice. Simples. Questions at the end. Thank you.
Well, thank you. I think that... I think you certainly covered the intrinsic factors within games.
I think
completely, yes. So now we'll move on to